from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Eric Westervelt, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, an update on last night's deadly terror attack at a concert in Manchester, England. ISIS is claiming responsibility. This morning, President Trump offered his condolences to the bombing victims.
So many young, beautiful, innocent people living and enjoying their lives murdered by evil losers in life.
We'll bring you the latest. And at 10:30, criminalizing foster youth. A new San Francisco Chronicle investigation finds that county shelters for abused and neglected children sent hundreds of kids into the criminal justice system in recent years, often for only minor incidents. That's coming up on Forum after the news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Eric Westervelt, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Welcome to Forum. Later this hour, a pattern of dubious arrests at California's shelters for abused and neglected children. But up first, we're going to bring you the latest on last night's terror attack at a pop concert in the English city of Manchester. At least 22 people were killed and more than 50 others wounded when a suicide bomber detonated himself as a concert by singer Ariana Grande was wrapping up. Many of the victims were teenagers and young adults and their parents. Here's Britain's Prime Minister, Theresa May.
All acts of terrorism are cowardly attacks on innocent people. But this attack stands out for its appalling, sickening cowardice, deliberately targeting innocent, defenseless children and young people who should have been enjoying one of the most memorable nights of their lives.
This morning, the Greater Manchester Police identified 22-year-old Salman Abedi as the suicide bomber. The self-proclaimed Islamic State terrorist group has claimed responsibility for the bombing. But Abedi's ties to the group are still unknown. And joining us now is BBC correspondent Robert Hall, who is in Manchester. And Robert, tell us a little bit about this suspected bomber. What are local law enforcement telling you, if anything, about who he is and what ties he might have to ISIS?
Hi, Eric. Good to talk to you. Well, I mean, this is the naming of Abedi comes at the end of a very busy day of police activity, not just at the Manchester Arena, which is one of the UK's largest entertainment venues, where forensic experts are going to be there for many hours going over the scene of the explosion. What they will need to do there is to try to piece together as much of the explosive device as they can, because that may give them clues as to its origin. Outside the police cordon, we've seen armed police on various missions, if you like, around the city. They've raided three addresses. They've made one arrest and carried out further searches. And in the last hour, Manchester's police chief told us that they named Abedi. He was 22. He was born in Manchester, the BBC understands, on New Year's Eve 1994. Our research indicates he had at least three siblings, an older brother born in London, a younger brother and sister born in Manchester here. They're believed to be of Libyan origin, and they've lived at more than one address in Manchester, including one of the properties that was raided by police this afternoon.
Robert, do we know if he had any previous run-ins with the law? Was he on the radar of British intelligence or local police? What do we know?
Very little at the moment, Eric. The police have been very guarded all day. Obviously, there have been suggestions as to this name. It, in fact, emerged on your side of the Atlantic some hours before it emerged here. But we couldn't confirm it, and he hasn't yet been formally identified by the coroner. I think we can assume that there's a lot of intelligence work, not just in the UK, probably involving intelligence agencies in the US and in Europe, and that they don't want to prejudge any of that, those possible links or that possible backstory until they're a lot further down the line. There are, we are told, further police operations to come.
We're speaking with BBC correspondent Robert Hall, who's in Manchester near the site of the bombing. And this was a pop concert, Robert. Many of the victims, we believe, were young people. What's the scene like today on the ground where you are?
Well, you can imagine the shock. There were something like 18,000 people at that concert by Ariana Grande. She appeals to a fan base of teenagers, early 20s, and most of the injured and the dead were in that age group. Only a couple have been named so far. One of them was just 8 years old. She was called Safi Rose Roussos. She goes to a little school just outside Manchester. Her head teacher said she was a beautiful little girl, loved by everyone, whose warmth and kindness would be remembered fondly. And at her school this afternoon, we've been out to look at it, people have begun laying flowers at the gates. It's that sort of shock. How could somebody have walked up the steps of that arena as people were leaving that concert? That man walked into a packed lobby with stalls selling merchandise all around him. He stood apparently in the middle of that crowd and he detonated that device. And the metal fragments that seemed to have been packed into the device simply blasted across that lobby and caused some of the most horrific injuries.
Robert, this is the worst terror attack in Britain since the 2005 subway and bus attack. Is there a growing sense in the UK that there's a possible wider ISIS cell, or were these folks self-radicalized, or is it simply too early to know?
I think it's too early to know, Eric. I think it's fair to say that the intelligence agencies and law enforcement here have been acutely aware of the possibility of fighters returning from Syria, coming back from Middle Eastern conflicts. More government money has been put into the intelligence services. I think one point needs to be made, though, and the Prime Minister, Theresa May, made it earlier. Others have made it overnight. When we have these incidents, these ghastly and cruel incidents, the community pulls together. And last night, when thousands of kids were pouring out of that arena, frightened, terrified, injured, local people, hoteliers, taxi drivers came, they looked after the injured, they rounded up the children who didn't have their parents, they took them somewhere safe, and they looked after them until help could be found. And that spirit continues tonight, Eric. As I speak to you now, thousands of people have gathered right in the centre of Manchester for a vigil, not only to remember those who've suffered and are still suffering, but also to show their solidarity, no matter what their creed or their religion.
The BBC's Robert Hall on the ground in Manchester. Robert, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Eric. Good to talk to you.
Joining us now is New York Times correspondent Rukmini Kelamaki. She covers al-Qaeda and ISIS. And Rukmini, what do we know about the authenticity of this claim of responsibility by ISIS?
We know for sure that it is being put out by the central news apparatus of the Islamic State. It was put out on Nashir, first of all, which is one of their official channels, and then it was mirrored on several other channels that the group uses on the messaging app Telegram. Now, of course, this doesn't necessarily mean that ISIS has carried out this attack, but it does mean that the terror group is taking pains to let us know that they want us to believe that they carried it out.
Does it matter substantively whether this was an attack sort of inspired by ISIS and their ideology or carried out by one of its terrorists that was actually trained by it? Do you think from a counterterrorism perspective that matters greatly or not?
It matters in terms of how the investigation is going to proceed, and it matters in terms of the signs that might have been missed ahead of the attack. If this was an attack that was directed by ISIS, meaning that their fighters trained and carried it out, then you would expect to have found some sort of communication between this alleged bomber and the terror cell. If it's an inspired attack, which is what we appear to have seen in Orlando and San Bernardino, then the radicalization happened online. And then there is possibly no digital link to the terror group, which makes it much more difficult for counterterrorism officials to get to the bottom of it.
Rukmini, remind us and our listeners about the London Bridge attack by car in March and what claims of responsibility, if any, were made back then.
Yes, that was another attack that was claimed by ISIS. A young man used his car to ram people near Parliament, and then later jumped out of the car and I believe used a knife to assault people. And yes, it was claimed in a similar manner. It came out on the Amaq news agency, which is again one of ISIS's channels, where they forcefully declared that this was one of their fighters.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Eric Westervelt. You can join the conversation. This is a half-hour segment. If you have questions, give us a call, 866-733-6786. You can call us at 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. We're talking about the Manchester terrorist attack last night at the Ariana Grande concert. And we're with New York Times correspondent Rukmini Callimachi. And I want to ask you, ISIS has been stretched, been pushed in its territory it gained, both in Iraq and Syria. Are some looking at this as now their attempted pushback in Europe and elsewhere?
That is the narrative that is coming out of Washington. I believe that it is wrong because the data does not support it. The belief out of Washington is that the terror group declared its caliphate and was busy building a state and only decided to retaliate against the West once we began airstrikes in September, October of 2014. In fact, the reporting I've done has shown that the very first Islamic State fighters who returned from their core territory in Iraq and Syria to Europe to carry out attacks left Iraq and Syria in December of 2013, so almost a year before the first airstrikes hit Raqqa. This is a group that was bent on building a state, but that was also in tandem putting together an infrastructure to carry out attacks in the West. If you go back to the earliest statements by the Islamic State's spokesman, Abu Muhammad al-Adnani, all the way back to 2014, you will see that in his statements, these two ideas recur in tandem, both building a state and holding a territory and carrying out attacks against the Kufar or the infidel, which is all of us.
And these were soft targets that were attacked. We're talking about a bridge in central London. We're talking about a pop concert that was ending. And apparently the attacker, this 22-year-old, was not attending the concert. We think he may have entered, just as people were leaving and entered the foyer. Talk a little bit about how difficult it is to sort of defend these soft targets like pop concerts and sporting events.
Difficult. I mean, unless we want to live in a police state or approach the types of security measures that countries like Israel have undertaken, these are targets that will always be available to these kinds of people. The thing that happens is that security is meant to keep the bad guys out of a particular venue. But very little is done on the street outside, right? We saw at the Istanbul airport attack last year that in fact what happened is that the attacker was striking just outside the most heavily guarded part of the terminal, and so yes, it's very difficult to provide security of this kind of blanket nature. And that's where law enforcement comes in. And we're hoping that our intelligence agencies are able to pick up even the weakest signals indicating that these attacks are about to take place.
This is Forum. We're talking with New York Times correspondent Rukmini Callimachi. Give us a call at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or get in touch on Twitter and Facebook at KQED. Forum. And Rukmini, tell us a little bit more. We heard from the BBC's Robert Hall there were some raids this morning. What, if anything, do we know about whether those raids have led to arrests, have produced any intelligence, that kind of thing?
We know that police have identified the suspected attacker as a young man named Salman Abadi, and we also know that there have been raids in at least 2 to 3 different locations. I'm not able to confirm who they have picked up at those locations because that information is not yet pinned down.
And so your research and reporting shows that ISIS has sent these kind of attackers long before they were stretched in Iraq.
Absolutely.
And Syria. Update us a little bit, if you can, on the ongoing attempts by the Iraqi government to push ISIS out of Mosul, and then the long-delayed attack on their stronghold and self-described caliphate headquarters in Raqqa.
I left Mosul a couple of weeks ago, and when I had left, the Iraqi army and their allies had taken all of eastern Mosul and was pushing with some strength into western Mosul. Right now, we're a couple of days before the start of Ramadan, which changes the equation because people are fasting during the day. But right now, what we are hearing is that the Islamic State is the remaining fighters in Mosul are cornered in a pocket of western Mosul in the old city. The problem is the old city of western Mosul is a place that is incredibly dense. These are streets where you can't even get a donkey cart through them. You can basically walk and touch both buildings on either side. That means that the troops that are going in have to go in by foot. They're not protected with, you know, the metallic skin of their Humvee. And that makes the battle that much more difficult. My sources on the ground are saying that the fight for Mosul is going to stretch out for several more weeks, if not longer. And even once Mosul falls, in Iraq, you still have the significant cities of Hawija and Tal Afar that are still under the control of the Islamic State. So the fight will continue. And that's before we even get to the problematic issue of Raqqa. At least in Iraq, it took a long time to get our allies up and running and to start the offensive. But in Iraq, there was a clear ally that the U.S. and the coalition could lean on, which is the Iraqi military. In Syria, it's still unclear which armed group is going to do the legwork. There is an ongoing dispute between the coalition and Turkey. The group in Syria that at least the last time I was there in 2015, that appeared to be the most able to carry out this fight is a rebel group called the YPG. They happen to be Kurdish rebels, and Turkey sees this as an affront to their sovereignty because there are Kurdish insurgents in their country that are trying to proclaim an independent state within Turkey. So for Raqqa, it's unclear what the timeline is going to be. It's unclear when it will happen, and it's unclear who will take that fight forward.
I've been in Mosul many times, covered the Iraq war. I just can't imagine pushing into some of those densely packed neighborhoods. It'll be incredibly difficult, and it's sort of understandable how long and a difficult and hard fight it's going to be with civilians entrenched there. Let's go to the phones. Jack in Berkeley, you're on Forum. Welcome.
Hi. I've just been curious always to know how can an organization like IS have an official news outlet? If it's a radio station, why isn't it jammed? If it's an internet site, why isn't it hacked, pulled down? I've just never understood why there can be an official outlet that isn't stopped.
Thanks for your call. Rukmini, you want to take that?
So it's...
Maybe we've lost Rukmini Kalamaki. We'll try to get her back on the line. And Mel in Berkeley, you're on the air at Forum. What's your question?
I would like to say that I think that the media is doing a very bad thing here. This is a terrible attack, of course, but, you know, you're really being used by ISIS as their means of spreading terror. This event should really be on the back page. It should be just a small thing. Here you're spending half an hour spreading terror around the United States. It's really wrong.
Mel, it's a major terrorist attack in the UK that killed 22 and injured some 60 people. You think the media writ large should largely ignore this?
Exactly, because it's 20 people out of 20,000. That's one in a thousand of Manchester people. It's a tiny, tiny thing. It's a blip, and the media is being played like a fiddle. You people don't realize that you're just part of the process that ISIS is using.
They've committed several terror attacks, including two in Britain. And Rukmini Kalamaki of The New York Times is back with us. Can you take the previous caller was asking essentially, you know, why aren't their radio stations jammed? Why aren't their websites blocked more? Can you answer that for the caller?
When I was in Mosul a couple of weeks ago, one of the things that had happened was that they had bombed their radio station, the Bayan radio station. So that answers that. But the bulk of ISIS's media is now being put out not on a website, but through a messaging app that people have on their phone called a Telegram. You can download it from your app store, and it creates basically secret chat rooms where these ISIS members congregate. I am in these chat rooms, and they're being taken down literally every day, sometimes several times in the same hour. But they just, they, as soon as one is taken down, another is put up. And they've become very good at migrating from chat room to chat room, always sending each other the link. And when an attack such as this one occurs, these chat rooms just light up with the news of the Islamic State.
Kind of whack-a-mole there, and they just keep bouncing around to different sites. Let's go to Anne in San Jose with a question. Welcome.
Well, first I want to say, as someone who served in the Gulf War in a tent hospital, I want to say thank you so much for your reporting. And two things, how do you keep yourself safe reporting on ISIS? And two, I heard, who contributes to ISIS more, Qatar or Saudi Arabia? I just heard Ahmed, the doctor who can't wrote in The Land of Invisible Women, and she said that Qatar was more culpable than Saudi Arabia. So those were the two questions. How do you keep yourself safe, and who really contributes money?
Thanks, Anne, for Rukmini Kalamaki. I know, you know, my reporting in Iraq, it was incredibly difficult, and that was largely during the U.S. military occupation, so you could at least travel from base to base sometimes with the U.S. military. Now it is completely chaotic in some parts of Iraq and Syria. How do you keep yourself safe?
When I'm in Mosul and when I'm in Iraq in general, I almost always travel with a security advisor who's a former military member and who's there basically to advise me on the territory that we're entering. We go everywhere in a convoy of cars. We're never traveling alone. And when we're actually entering the conflict zone, we are never just by ourselves. We're embedded with Iraqi troops. We're embedded with other coalition partners, and so in fact, in Mosul, I have to say I felt pretty safe on these last couple of trips.
Interesting. Mark writes in: ISIS wants moderate Muslims to join their quest for the caliphate. Do you think that's accurate, given your reporting?
ISIS wants all Sunni Muslims to join their quest. They do not consider Shias to be Muslims. They consider them to be
apostates.
Infidels and apostates, just like us, really. But what they are trying to do is they are trying to create a perception of a wedge between modernity and the Western world and Muslims. They want people to believe that the only place where a Sunni Muslim is going to feel comfortable and safe, where a woman who wears a hijab is going to be able to walk around unmolested, is in their self-declared caliphate.
How did the bomber get past security? Rob Watson talked about vigils on the ground there and in Manchester. Do we know anything more briefly about how this bomber may have gotten into this arena?
Well, the reporting that my colleagues have done from Manchester indicates that that the person never actually went inside the venue. They were outside in an area that was external to the concert hall, and was there when the crowds that had gone to the concert were emerging.
So we never actually got inside. We've been talking with New York Times correspondent Rukmini Kalamaki. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Earlier, we heard from the BBC's Rob Watson in Manchester. I'm Eric Westervelt, sitting in for Michael Krasny. There's more for him to come. Stay with us.